So welcome everyone. Welcome. Welcome. Let's just feel the moment together. Let's just allow ourselves to. See, it doesn't, the distance isn't there. Can you sense that? Okay, so I hope everyone had a good night's rest and are willing to venture on in this. This is hard, Dharma. I mean, you can listen to it intellectually and then it's kind of easy and you can just put it down, bookmark it, and come back another day. But if you're willing to take it in, as it's being said, the energy of that transmission is being offered. And so, but don't do it if there's some reluctance to take this topic on. Once it pulls you in, it's unrelenting. I mean, it really pulls you in and pulls you out, you might say, while it pulls you in. But the beauty of it is that it's true. But there's a timing for truth. You don't just recklessly go in because something is true. It needs preparation. It needs stability. Psychological stability, it needs bodily stability, it needs wisdom, the stability that wisdom offers. So some of it is, a lot of it is timing. That's why the secret teachings are kept at a distance from those who are beginning, because not for the fact that they're secret, but because they can be ruinous if you're taken on too early. And one quick story. I was in Burma with somebody who was fairly new to meditation, and we were doing really long hours and very intensive practice. And he started not urinating during the day so that he could wake himself up at night so that he could be awake for the meditation. And he was going crazy. And the teachers, the Burmese teachers, weren't seeing it because they didn't have the understanding of the Western psyche, but I saw it, and I, you know, there's a stern warning there that I felt I took in about, you know, going mad about this stuff. This should be a delight. This should be an adventure into wonder, a venture into curiosity, into all of that. And so that's my intro to today. All right, so I'm just going to go right into a Dharma talk here. First let's remember the Heart Sutra and the view it was offering, the correct and true view of what life really is when you take away all the ways that we complicate it through our mental discourses with life. And so that true and very accurate description is summed up in form is emptiness and emptiness is form. So what you're seeing is form for most of us. We don't really see the emptiness part of it. Why don't we see the emptiness part of it? Because the emptiness part of it is in the seeing of it. And we don't care about the seeing of it. We care about the of it that we see. And so we're totally form conscious. We are addicted to form. Why are we addicted to form? Well, it offers us pleasure. It offers us circumstances. It offers us control. It offers us empowerment. It offers us, listen, me. It offers us me as a recognized form and expression. I am hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, understanding, controlling, and in that isolated sense of me that I have created because I'm interested in the form, and the form is always insulated by itself. It has its own definition, have its own boundaries. You can't really do anything to form but touch it or sense it. So it's not a full communication. It's an aberration of what life really is, which is an interconnected, formless wonder. So it's okay. All of us have lives within form that we have to honor, no matter what degree of awareness we have of realized. Form will be around because it's there. It's what seeing sees. Seeing holds form, but is itself not a form. That is where the emptiness resides. It's in the seeing, the awareness that sees, not the thing that it sees. Awareness sees the thing, it holds the thing, but it isn't of form. So you can't see awareness. And so we just bypass it and claim, oh, I'm seeing. It's just a, we just claim the eyes are doing it or whatever. But we're missing an essential part of the equation of life when we throw away the formless and just live according to form, because you're missing the true view of the Heart Sutra. Form is emptiness. What do you see? You don't see that when you're just living life in relationship to form. But when we start understanding how we've complicated life so that we don't really see its entirety, we see just what we want to see, then we start a spiritual adventure into opening up that perception so that life can be what it is rather than what we want it to be, what we say it is. So that's the view of the Heart Sutra. And thank God for the Heart Sutra, because it's very exact, and it's a tremendous pointing. And it's a rock of understanding that if you want to avoid it, you can, but you got to walk around it, because it's coming at you everywhere, especially in this age where we have all the traditions coming together beautifully. And I think nothing happens outside of everything happening. Everything is happening together. And because all these beautiful sutras and teachings are available, we're also having the cosmic evolution of our, what I talked about yesterday, of the evolution of our consciousness, which is trying to edge us. These are my words. I don't know what consciousness, you know, that's all. But my sense is that it's moving us towards a consciousness that is not I-driven. That's my sense. And even if it's not, if that's me hoping, which I don't think it is, but I give that as a possibility because I don't have any inside information. No one's talking to me about it. It's still our privilege to be able to go in that direction anyway. And the more you do, the more you're helpful you are, the more loving you are, the more compatible you are, the more integrated you are, the more compassion, on and on. Okay, on, you get it. All right. So now we're going to start going into the second of these suttas, that allow us to fulfill a way forward, given the Heart Sutra. Well, it doesn't tell you how to go forward. It just spells it out. And so the four foundations of mindfulness, which I don't know if they've ever been interpreted in conjunction with the Heart Sutra. This may be my innovation to Dharma in my lifetime, but it works perfectly. Now, that's if you're not ideological. If you're not going to let Zen touch Theravada because one's the lesser vehicle, one's the great vehicle, well, then you're going to be lost in this. But if you let yourself feel what this, the binding, the integration that these two suttas have for each other, then I guarantee you there is light at the end of the tunnel. But you have to do it with sincerity, because the four foundations, from my point of view now, is it's leading us through the formed, embraced world we know and have always lived with into the very adventure that the Heart Sutra compels for, spreads before us. Okay, so the first foundation of, I'm just going to go right into it now, so just hang in there with me. And, you know, if it doesn't make sense, you can read my book, and that'll help you make sense in accordance to my own path forward in this. It's not the only path forward, so I don't ever want to claim privileged in the understanding of any of these sutras. They're my understandings of the sutras, and you'll have lots of commentaries that contradict what I'm saying. But this works if you're interested, if you're interested in realized wisdom. This works. I'm an example of it having worked. Well, you may say, well, don't, I'm not going there. Anyway, it works. So what's the first foundation? First foundation is how something, he takes the body. He doesn't go out there and say, look at that tree. Now we're going to make that tree into nothing. He goes to something that's very familiar, the most familiar thing. He goes to our body. And he shows us how that body has become something through our mind. When we perceive the body through our mind, we perceive it through our recognition. Now, let me stop right there for a second. Perception, that which sees, okay, that's pure awareness, just the perception itself, the seeing. Okay, so that's, perception is pure seeing. But on top of perception comes recognition. In fact, I heard a neurologist say one time that the same neurological pathways of recognition, that is the memory of what is being seen, as opposed to the just seeing, are the same neurological pathways. So in other words, when we see something, we don't realize whether we're seeing it purely or we're seeing it through memory, because both of those, according to this neurologist, are the same pathways. And so no wonder there's confusion. And because we as a sense of self want something stable at the other end of our seeing, we don't see it as a pure perception. Pure perception doesn't hold the word tree. It doesn't hold the word for anything. That's the recognition component of it. That's where the pure seeing gets involved with the mind, and the mind distorts that pure seeing into what it knows the world to be through its memory. So that's the neurological pathway. I always think these are interesting because they absolutely fit in terms of our confusion. Okay, so perception, pure seeing, and recognition. Okay, so we enter the body, and this is so beautifully. One translation of the Four Foundations says, we enter the body and quiet our narrative without, listen to this because it's so beautiful, without knowledge and remembrance. Now, there's somebody I would like to talk to because it's obvious that he and I are on the same trajectory in terms of understanding this sutta, just that without knowledge and remembrance. He's taking away the recognition component of perception. And how do you take it away? Because it's not that you stop seeing it. So that's just intrinsic to the seeing as you see form. But he's taking it away in the sense that we can quiet. We know that thoughts are saying that. We know what they're saying. Even elementary insight meditation begins to see the mind and the displays of mind, and one of those are the thoughts that encompass everything that we see. And if we're quiet enough, we can begin to seek that quietude, which is pure perception, and not the recognition. You can differentiate between those two. So that we enter the body and quiet our narrative. Uh, See, what was a sensation, physical sensation, because we're looking at the body. What is a physical sensation without knowledge and remembrance? The Buddha said it this way. He said, see the body as the body. And for a lot of time, that didn't really, it wasn't the same as without knowledge and remembrance, but I believe that's exactly what he meant. See the body as the body, not what we make the body into, but as a form, what is it? And as we get quiet and actually look at the form, and this is part of the sutta, the part of the four foundations, body is the first thing that you feel, oh, that's my body. And see, that's just noise covering over the unknown of what the body really is. Okay, so the spirit of Dharma is that we awaken to the wonder before we called it something. The wonder of Dharma isn't in the name of what we call it. It's in the wonder that can be released from the object, and it turns not into an object anymore because we've taken its descriptive element, which is its name, out of itself into silence. And now you can feel wonder. And wonder is an indication, wonder, you know, whoa, this is amazing. That sense of whoa, like that awe, that is intrinsic to formless awareness when it perceives without word. It's not in a state of wonder, because that's giving it qualities that it does, but it's just like quiet and still and curious. You know, anyway, I'm not going to ascribe, it's better not to ascribe words to the formless awareness, because now all of a sudden we make it into us. And I would just as soon keep it in its true its true reverence, which is quiet. So anyway. So we, in Dharma, we talk a lot about not knowing, you know, and that's an essential phrase that we use, but none of us really understand, or few of us really understand what not knowing means when it's applied. And it just means what I'm talking about now, taking the name from the form. Name and form is well-known couplet in Buddhism, and you take away the naming and you lose the formation. And the task of the first foundation is to show us that form is intrinsically empty when it's not being processed by mind through name and memory. So insight meditation begins to weaken the conviction we are what we have assumed ourselves to be. Because if you're going to take away the name of what you see, you're also weakening the conviction of me being a separate self. Those two arise together. How we see and what we see are directly impactful to the sense of me seeing. Me seeing is not an entity. It's the assumption at the end of what I see. Oh, I see a tree. Now I'm fully blown up as a person knowledgeable about trees. Okay, but if you stop saying or wording everything, you lose that sense of self-solidity that knowing provides, and you become wondrous in and of yourself. You become wondrous and you lose the sense of self into that wonder. But we think, oh, I am having a wondrous moment. No wonder is having you, eliminating you. Okay, so you see, the whole thing flips. It's like we've had the pancake on the grill one-sided and it's burning. So we say, okay, now I flip it over. Now we're in the formless awareness and it's a whole new world out there. It's a beautiful world. I hope I can say it in a way that encourages you forward rather than frightens you from it. But you need to respect both of those and go at your own pace in your own time. I can't say that enough. I can't control how forceful you are with yourself, but be tender and loving and get a sense of your own timing, Okay, so that's probably the last time I'm going to say this, but it's such an important point. Please. Okay. So the sense of self is a derivative of mind. It's like seeing the world through a distorted lens. Once you have a sense of self, you have formations. It only knows to see formations. So you look through the sense of self, everything you see will become a formation. And even if you're trying to see the sense of self, if there's an eye back there trying to see yourself, sense of self, you'll hold yourself as a formation. It distorts everything into a formation. That's what its objective is, in order to keep itself around and keep itself safe and to keep itself knowledgeable and to keep itself in control. Only awareness is unconditioned and can see just what is without the interference of mind. We need to remember that. Awareness, free of self, free of the distorted qualities of me seeing, is the access. So the first foundation is an exploration of form. What is it? What does it hold? How does it hold itself together over time? What is the role of memory? All of that. You learn about it, because when you sit down, and we'll do a guided meditation, when you sit down, well, you know exactly where you're sitting, you know who's sitting, you know, and you start looking through your sense of self, so everything you see is going to be formed. And as the self quiets through just the quiet of meditation, it takes as the edge off that distortion. And you can begin to sense, if you're completely still, that the body is a completely unknown. It's sensation. We can call it, we change it from body, oh, it's just sensation. But so what is sensation? If you don't call sensation something, it doesn't have a relevance either. It doesn't have a formation to it. See, we try to keep ourselves by being more subtle in the words we use to label what it is that we know. So we start with body. Am I talking too fast? I feel like I'm talking too fast. I don't want to rush this, for God's sake. Okay. So we progress, the Dharma progresses through our willingness to release the stability words offer. When we call something, that's form convincing itself that it is form, that it's formed. So in quieter moments, as we move beyond body, we're willing to see not the body as the body, but the body as sensation. It's good. It's quieter. It's a quieter expression of ourself, but we're still calling it something. And if we call it something, it's still going to be in formation. We have to be still, even with a sense of sensation. So this is the four foundations beginning to show us the hidden reality of form essentially being formless, right? Because in Heart Sutra it says form and is formless. Formlessness is form. They're this one and the same thing. So we should be able to go back and forth, as we are doing right now, with those hardened forms and with the opened, unknown awareness, still awareness of just seeing. The body, when the Buddha says the body as the body, free from knowledge and remembrance, he's redirecting our attention towards a different perception. But we can go a long time in our meditation and never allow that perception to either be seen, or if it is seen, to be consolidated back into ourselves, saying, oh, I just had a great meditation experience where I saw the emptiness of form. But when you're talking from that place, you're no longer seeing that because you've re-solidified yourself now with something you're owning, which is the perception, rather than living the perception as it was and as it was revealed to you. You're now making that perception into an experience that we had, and that just solidifies form. A perception free of the past. So we go from recognition to pure perception. What is the body in essence? What is it that awareness sees? Not what do I see? The eye is part of what awareness sees. And if you really intend yourself to include yourself within awareness, then you'll be willing to go. It's available. Let me just say that. It's available to you. It's available to you. There's going to be, there's a lot of egoic stoppages. Ego tries to convince you this and that to keep you back into form. The ego has a shape and has a purpose in life and has a whole sense of itself in life. And if it's unknown and just fully accessible, then it starts taking on the eye and the conceit and all of that, which we can see in our politics. But if you want to see it as it is, you won't look at the sense of self through the ego derivation. You'll see the derivation of ego. Because then the past will play an ever-increasing role, and you could care less about the moment. If the ego takes control, it's concerned about the future and the past. It has no place in the present, because in the present, in now, not present as a sense of time, but the now that is timeless, it can't find itself. Because you've eliminated the remembrance that follows us in terms of recognition. See, the now doesn't hold the memory of something. I mean, you can think if you want to think, but it doesn't hold that as the standard reference point. It holds wonder, mystery. It holds awareness as the central perception. See, we're attempting to free the present from the past, and that becomes now. So, see, that's really where we're going. It's very simple. It may be hard to do because the ego is trying to dissuade you from doing it. It's trying to say, I don't understand any of that. That's ego. You certainly do understand, as I pointed out yesterday, if we're quiet together, that understanding can become transformative. You can say, wow, you know, there is a sense of stillness in me. I'm just not all noise. And that sense of stillness, when it's entered, really reveals a shift in perception about the nature of life and the nature of me within life. Remembering that the nature of me and the nature of life are completely dependent upon one another for the solidity it provides. If you aren't seeing solidity in life in that moment, you're not solid. You're an extension of that seeing. You're not seeing from awareness. You're seeing in awareness. And both of those are being seen by awareness at the same time. And therefore, they have that same perceptual configuration of connectedness or emptiness or... And let's don't move too quickly beyond that, back to your old perceptions. I've said that many times, so I'm not going to say that anymore. Okay, so now we're with sensation. Well, I can say, okay, well, it's not just sensation. There's energy there, and energy. Okay, so now as soon as we label it, we're back into form. I don't care how it's molecular. I don't care how you label it. You're back into form. And so science just continues to label it further and further and stays in formation. And the wonders of the unformed will never be revealed as long as that's their tactic. That's not dismissing science, believe me. It's the truth about form. It provides truth about form. But that's only half the story. It's not even half the story. It's just a little bit of the story. So anyway, I don't want to go that direction. So if we don't bring words even to energy, it can't sustain itself as something. So even energy, you see, no matter where the mind wants to land on something and say, okay, I can see I'm not body, but I'm sensation. Oh, I can see I'm not sensation, I'm just energy. Okay, now you gotta stop and live it as sensation. Live it as energy. That's what Tai Chi does. It shows you the wonder of energy. It shows you the wonder of what's around us all the time that we miss. And that's a very subtle expression of what we are. So it may become incomprehensible. And that's fine. But you have to be prepared for sometimes fear, sometimes terror of the incomprehensible. The incomprehensible means just what it says. You can't comprehend it. And that sometimes takes, don't let fear back you away. It's the ego's last stand. If you go through the ego, its last stand is to terrorize you back into your submission. It's not a thing, so I'm making it too dramatic, but it does have levels of defenses that protects it from being seen as the formless. And those are all things that we invest into it, but they're there. And you have to take them seriously when they come up. And so just bringing that sense of quiet curiosity, even to fear. Oh, what is this? That's interesting. Well, I feel my body all. It's interesting. It really is interesting. And when you convert fear into interest, it loses much of its hold. Okay, so this is, I'm moving pretty quickly. Let's see, where am I? Okay, so let me go to the second foundation. Okay, the second foundation, now that we've disassembled everything, I mean, in the first foundation, how does that which we've disassembled come back into form? So how does nothing become something? The first one was how something became nothing, how form became empty, and now we're seeing how empty becomes form. And that's the cross equality of the Heart Sutra. One is the other. So let's look at this, because this is when you start talking about dependent origination, people's eyes glaze over. But just follow me, because it's actually kind of interesting. And much of it, you can, no matter where you are in your meditation depth, you can get a sense of. It's because it shows you how the mind creates the known from nothing. Okay, so from nothing comes me. How did I get here? You know what? Yes, I can trace my lineage back to birth and, you know, on and on, but that's not the momentary arising of me. We're not talking about time here. We're talking about the immediate, instant perception of me. And that happens moment after moment. So quickly, said the Buddha, that you can't distinguish the flickers of that happening. Okay, through the mechanism, first of all, remember that recognition, the perception is now moving towards recognition. Now, I need to, there's a knowing quality to awareness. And let me show you what the knowing quality, this is how it's explained to me, and I always thought it was a great example. It's not that it knows, if I go like this, awareness doesn't recognize, well, that's Rodney's hand, five finger. It doesn't recognize, it just knows something's happened. Okay, that's the knowing quality. This, not the specifics of this, not the detail. That's mind. That's recognition. But it holds form, but doesn't categorize it. Just like that. It knows something happened. Now that knowing something happened is picked up by the mind, and a feeling tone, a pleasant, oh, that's my hand. That's not awareness seeing that. That's the mind's interpretation, which is very different than awareness. That's mind now. That's the mind coding. And when it's being seen, there's a feeling tone associated with it from the mind. And that's the first access point that the mind has. It responds with a feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. I don't care about it, basically. And so that feeling tone, now listen, because this is really important, that comes from the mind. It doesn't come from the thing that is seen, right? It could be a dessert, and you have a memory of desserts being very pleasant. I have a pleasant feeling about that. But the dessert does not contain the feeling. You contain the feeling. It's a projection out onto, not contained by the object. But the knowing quality builds upon that through its recognition and memory. And so from feeling comes a tendency to move towards. The feeling doesn't stop with that. The mind starts working its way toward energy to aggregate and move towards or away, depending on, or just not even noticing, a feeling. And then as that feeling becomes more compelling, well, the desire appears, and energy begins to coalesce, forcing forward a someone who is craving or avoiding what? The feeling and the memory. It's not the thing itself. All of this is coming not from the thing itself, but from the mind's repetitious memory of having seen it and knowing what is on the other side of that object it has now created. You see, it's all internal. And this inward tension keeps us attached to our memory and belief. So as that feeling starts acting itself out in terms of desire, then our history of that object begins to come up into the mind. And now we're full blown. We're a person separate from, because how can I pursue something if I'm the same thing as it, which I was prior to this beginning of dependent origination? See, I was one with it, and now I've separated myself out from it so that I can have it. And that's where I come in, on you. So what we have here is, think of the 12 links of dependent origination as guests around a dinner table. Okay, you have feelings, and you have desire, and you have craving, and you have birth, and then you have old age. You have all these things, okay? Except you don't. One thing isn't there. One thing is assumed. They're all talking to each other, communicating, and in the middle of this, like Aladdin in a lamp, springs forth me. The me is not sitting around the table. These are just inflection points that allow the me to show itself in the middle of the table. That itself is nothing but the vast array of conversation that is going on around me. I don't know if this is working as an analogy, but then suddenly I'm full blown. I have a place here, and now I take control. And all these things that are happening around the table, all these 12 seats, are part of me. I don't pay much attention to them. I just go after what it is I desire. Gobble it down and wait for the next desired or aversion, because it's just the opposite of aversion and desire, are just opposites of one another. And so we have this this configuration. You see how the, okay, this is the Heart Sutra in detail. The Buddha's skill for me was taking this apart so we could actually enter and see this happening. You may not have the subtlety to see all 12 parts, but you may have the ability to see yourself coming through in craving. When craving occurs to you, how in place you are, how differentiated you are, how separate you feel. What do you think that just has been with you the whole time? No, it's because of the circumstances that we have been dwelling on in terms of our memory and projection of that memory and feeling onto the world. So it's just interesting to see this. We project our conditioned feelings upon an object and then pursue the object, which was itself created by the mind. This is all happening up here. You see? The object doesn't contain the feeling. We do. Just start with the ownership of all of this occurring. It's all happening here. It's not happening out there. No matter how delicious that dessert looks, that is a pure perception from mind onto it. Now, as we go through this kind of turbulent origin of ourselves, you can feel, you know, the desperation, the neediness, the wanting, the separation. You can feel all of the disadvantages to being alone, isolated from the rest of creation through our own inward dynamics. And there's a certain, at some point, you may feel, because I certainly have, there's a certain sadness to having taken part in all this, because once it gets rolling, well, you know how hard it is to change course. It's very hard. And all of the pains of the world, all of the pains of the world are self-imposed. That's the sadness, is the sadness of prolonged human sorrow. And that it carries a greater weight as you see deeper into it. But what I want to pull out in terms of there is a way forward. If we were shut off from way forward, then, well, we could just eat more dessert, I guess. But if we begin to see how the changing nature of self, just even if the 12 links are too nuanced to follow, which may or may not be true for you. One thing that is important is to see the changing formations of self, sometimes present, sometimes absent, sometimes full of rage or desire and very strongly there as an entity, sometimes quiet and silent and less, almost invisible as an entity. And somehow we summate all of that as I, as if I were one thing. We are not one thing. Sometimes we're connected. Sometimes we're feeling the abidance of love. Sometimes we're wondrous and hold it all in a mystery. Don't come out of that and say, wow, that was really cool, but now I'm back to myself. There's no one stance that's called yourself. You are all of these things and nothing at the same time. And just start letting that perception of you as a human being and what change with circumstance, which it will, and it does all the time. And then we take birth. Once we've invested in all of that, we take birth in the sequencing, and we make up this whole longevity thing about our relatives and all of that and where we came from and our relatives' relatives. And I mean, in one way, it's not fiction. In another way, it's total fiction. And we take birth, and let me say, if you take birth, you're going to die. If you never take birth, you're not going to die. Formless awareness does not die. It doesn't change. It doesn't change. Remember this was an important part of yesterday's talk. It doesn't go anywhere. Where is it going to go? It's fundamentally itself, always. It's not like alchemy, where you're trying to boil some concoction down to gold. It doesn't go into an evolutionary shift. It stays, because it doesn't move. But it shows all movement, which is amazing, see. And it allows you to invest in the movement, which we have done, and become a somebody. Or you can disinvest in that and come back to non-movement eternity. Now, I want to say one thing before I end this. Now, I'm going to use an analogy, but may not work. If you're sitting in a chair and you grab the handles of the chair and try to pull yourself off the floor by pushing up on the handles, well, it's obvious that you're not going to rise above the floor. Okay? That's analogous to using our willpower to solve our problems. What we're doing is using the formed sense of ourself and the power it has ascribed as its own, my willpower, and it's trying to move something that is functioning the way it is because of your willpower, because of the power of yourself, determined to stay a sense of self, is that a different way, and is trying to raise itself up through its own mechanism called willpower. It's trying to diminish itself. It's trying to understand itself, using its own force of power. It can't be done any more than lifting up the chair while you're sitting in it can be done. It's an incomplete analogy, but I thought it was pretty good. So too will the power of mind push against itself, keeping itself formed through its own efforts. You see, that's ultimately, if you use your own efforts, you're reforming yourself. Using your own efforts, remembering that the mind distorts everything in accordance to form, and it's using that form it knows called me, and I think I'm going in the right way, but willpower just is ignorant. It doesn't know how to go. And it doesn't see itself to be able to determine any other way forward. So I just want to leave you with that. Willpower is coming from the formed assumption of me. And when I said this turns everything upside down, how we go about accessing the formless awareness has to be turned upside down, or we'll just keep accessing formed recognition, form, memory, solidity, differentiation, isolation. That's what we're going to be reinforcing. So how is it that we release our will? What's there? If our willpower isn't, it's not that you're taken completely out of the picture. You're just given, you know, you're given a bleach seat. Bleachers, you're in the bleachers now. You can see it, you see it, but you have to now give your power over to the place you're going, to the formless awareness. Formless awareness has facets of it which will pull you forward. It isn't going, it's going to be its journey. It's no longer, well, it's my journey as when I come back into form, but it's its journey now. It's timing, it's evolution. It does itself now. And we don't have enough faith that that will happen, so we keep going back to willpower. But the quicker we get over that and give ourselves over And you don't give yourselves over and turn away and just forget about the whole thing, because it requires awareness. And that awareness from one perspective is coming from you. From another perspective, it never was. But you're going to be showing up alongside it for a while until you acknowledge the emptiness you are. So you're going to be right there seeing, and you've got to give it a full display and you've got to give it attention, but it will not be a force that you provide, and the force will come and it will change you right along the way. And that is as far as we can go. That's it. So, hello. Okay, let's see some smiles here. Well, I hope I didn't torture you through that. This is, you know, it gets heavy, but what, you know, it's not really. It's just we make it heavy. I can't do that. All of us put our minds in front of the path forward, and we think, oh God, I can't fear. I can't. No, no. Oh, it's all self-determined. Stop doing it, and but you got to go through what you've already done in order to see it's benign. You know, that's the problem, is that we created these layers to ourselves, and where you're hearing this from and the journey we have to get out of it seems long, and it's long because we keep doing it to ourselves until we learn how not to. And one of those ways forward is the only way forward is to use our awareness to see what it is that's obstructing us. And then you let awareness handle it. But you don't turn away and say, awareness will handle this. I don't want to see the fear. You got to show up for the fear, because it's awareness is showing up for it. And you're being assumed within that mix for a long time. So don't turn away is what I'm saying. You got to show up 100% for this. Just don't try to force it in your direction. That's the distortion.